The Worm Ouroboros by E. R. Edison. Chapter 12, Part 3. All day the storm held, and in a lull they struck camp and came down again to Throstlegarth, and there abode 9 days and 9 nights, in wind and rain and battering hail. On the 10th day the weather abated, and they went up and crossed the glacier and lodged them in a cave in the rock at the foot of the great north buttress of Kostra Pivarka. At dawn, Jus and Brandok Daha went forth to survey the prospect. They crossed the mouth of the steep, snow-choked valley that ran up to the main ridge betwixt Ashnilan on the west and Kostra Pivarka on the east, rounded the base of Ilanon, and climbed from the west to a snow-saddle some 3,000 feet up the ridge of the mountain, whence they might view the buttress and choose their way for their attempt. "'Tis a 2 days' journey to the top,' said Lord Brandok Daha. "'If night on the ridge frees us not to death, I dread no other hindrance. That black rib that riseth half a mile above our camp shall take us clean up to the crest of the buttress, striking it above the great tower at the northern end. If the rocks be like those we camped on, hard as diamond and rough as a sponge, they shall not fail us but by our own neglect. As I live, I ne'er saw their like for climbing. So far, well, said Jus. Above, said Brandok Daha, I'd drive thee a chariot until we come to the first great kick of the ridge. That must we round, or ne'er go further, and on this side it showeth ill enough, for the rocks shelve outward. If they be iced, there's work indeed. Beyond that, I'll prophesy not, O Jus, for I can see naught clear save that the ridge is hacked into clefts and steeples. How we may overcome them must be put to the proof. It is too high and too far to know. This only. Where we would go, there have we gone until now. And by that ridge lieth, if any way there lieth, the way to this mountain-top that we cross the world to climb. Next day, with the first paling of the skies, they arose all three and set forth southward over the crisp snows. They roped at the foot of the glacier that came down from the saddle, some 5,000 feet above them, where the main ridge dips between Ashnilan and Kostra Pivarka. Ere the brighter stars were swallowed in the light of morning, they were cutting their way among the labyrinthine towers and chasms of the icefall. Soon the new daylight flooded the snowfields of the high glacier of Tamarm, dyeing them green and saffron and palest rose. The snows of Islargine glowed far away in the north, to the right of the white dome of Emshir. Elamantisera blocked the view northeastward. The buttress that bounded their valley on the east plunged it in shadow, blue as a summer sea. High on the other side, the great twin peaks of Ilanon and Ashnilan, roused by the warm beams out of their frozen silence of the night, growled at whiles with avalanches and falling stones. Jus was their leader in the icefall, guiding them now along high knife-edges that fell away on either hand to unsounded depths, now within the very lips of those chasms, along the bases of the ice-towers. These, 5 times a man's height, some square, some pinnacled, some shattered or piled with the ruins of their kind, leaned above the path, as ready to fall and overwhelm the climbers and dash their bones for ever down to those blue-green secret places of frost and silence where the chips of ice chinked hollow as Jus pressed onward, cutting his steps with Mivarsha's axe. At length the slope eased, and they walked out on the unbroken surface of the glacier, and, passing by a snow-bridge over the great rift betwixt the glacier and the mountainside, came, 2 hours before noon, to the foot of the rock rib that they had scanned from Ilanon. Now was Brandok Daha to lead them. They climbed face to the rock, slowly and without rest. For sound and firm as the rocks were, the holds were small and few, and the cliffs steep. Here and there a chimney gave them passage upward, but the climb was mainly by cracks and open faces of rock, a trial of main strength and endurance, such as few might sustain for a short while only. But this wall was 3,000 feet in height. By noon they gained the crest, and there rested on the rocks, too weary to speak, looking across the avalanche-swept face of Kostra Pivarka to the corniced parapet that ended against the western precipices of Kostra Bullorn. For some way the ridge of the buttress was broad and level. Then it narrowed suddenly to the width of a horse's back, and sprang skyward 2,000 feet and more. Brandok Daha went forward and climbed a few feet up the cliff. It bulged out above him, smooth and holdless. He tried it once and again, then came down saying, "Not without wings." Then he went to the left. Here hanging glaciers overlooked the face from on high, and while he gazed, an avalanche of ice blocks roared down it. Then he went to the right, and here the rocks sloped outward, and the sloping ledges were piled with rubbish, and the rocks rotten and slippery with snow and ice. So, having gone a little way, he returned, and said, "O Jus," he said, "we'll take it right forth, and that must be by flying, for hold, there is none. Or wilt go east and dodge the avalanche, or west, where all is rotten and slither, and a slip were our destruction." So they debated, and at length decided on the eastern road. It was an ill step round the jutting corner of the tower, for little hold there was, and the rocks were undercut below, so that a stone or a man loosed from that place must fall clear at a bound 3,000 or 4,000 feet to the Kostra Glacier, and there be dashed in pieces. Beyond, wide ledges gave them passage along the wall of the tower that now swept inward, facing south. Far overhead, dazzling white in the sunshine, the broken glacier edges and splinters jutted against the blue, and icicles greater than a man hung glittering from every ledge. A sight heavenly fair, whereof they yet had little joy, hastening as they had not hastened in their lives before to be out of the danger of that ice-swept face. Suddenly was a noise above them like the crack of a giant whip, and looking up they beheld against the sky a dark mass which opened like a flower and spread into 100 fragments. The demons and Mivarsh hugged the cliffs where they stood, but there was little cover. All the air was filled with the shrieking of the stones as they swept downward like fiends returning to the pit, and with the crash of them as they dashed against the cliffs and burst in pieces. The echoes rolled and reverberated from cliff to distant cliff, and the limbs of the mountains seemed to writhe as under a scourge. When it was done, Mivarsh was groaning for pain of his left wrist, sore hurt with a stone. The others were scatheless. Jus said to Brandok Daha, "Back, howsoever it displease thee." Back they went, and an avalanche of ice crashed down the face, which must have destroyed them had they proceeded. "Thou dost misjudge me," said Brandok Daha, laughing. "Give me where my life lieth on mine own might and main. Then is danger meat and drink to me, and naught shall turn me back. But here, on this cursed cliff, on the ledges whereof a cripple might walk at ease. We be the toys of chance, and it were pure folly to abide upon it a moment longer."
"Two ways be left us," said Jus, "to turn back, and that were our shame forever, and to essay the western traverse. And that should be the bane of any, save of me and thee," said Brandok the Haw.
"And if our bane, why, we shall sleep sound."
"Mivarsh," said Jus, "is not so bounden to this adventure. He hath bravely held by us, and bravely stood our friend. Yet here we be come to such a pass, I sore misdoubt me if it were less danger of his life to come with us than seek safety alone." But Mivarsh put on a hardy face. Never a word he spake, but nodded his head, as who should say, "Forward." "First I must be thy leech," said Jus, and he bound up Mivarsh's wrist. And because the day was now far spent, they camped under the great tower, hoping next day to reach the top of Kostra Pivarka, that stood unseen some 6,000 feet above them. Next morning, when it was light enough to climb, they set forth. For 2 hours' space on that traverse, not a moment passed but they were in instant peril of death. They were not roped, for on those slabbery rocks one man had dragged a dozen to perdition had he made a slip. The ledges sloped outward. They were piled with broken rock and mud. The soft red rock broke away at a hand's touch and plunged at a leap to the glacier below. Down and up and along, and down and up again, they wound their way, rounding the base of that great tower, and came at last by a rotten gully safe to the ridge above it. While they climbed, white wispy clouds which had gathered in the high gullies of Eilanon in the morning had grown to a mass of blackness that hid all the mountains to the west. Great streamers ran from it across the gulf below, joined, and boiled upward, lifting and sinking like a full-tided sea, rising at last to the high ridge where the demons stood, and wrapping them in a cloak of vapor with a chill wind in its folds, and darkness in broad noonday. They halted, for they might not see the rocks before them. The wind grew boisterous, shouting among the splintered towers. Snow swept powdery and keen across the ridge. The cloud lifted and plunged again like some great bird shadowing them with its wings. From its bosom the lightning flared above and below. Thunder crashed on the heels of the lightning, sending the echoes rolling among the distant cliffs. Their weapons, planted in the snow, sizzled with blue flame. Jus had counseled laying them aside, lest they should perish holding them. Crouched in a hollow of the snow among the rocks of that high ridge of Kostra Pivarka, Lord Jus and Lord Brandok the Haw and Mivarsh Faz weathered that night of terror. When night came, they knew not, for the storm brought darkness on them hours before sundown. Blinding snow and sleet and fire and thunder and wild wind shrieking in the gullies till the firm mountain seemed to rock kept them awake. They were near frozen and scarce desired aught but death, which might bring them ease from that hellish roundelay. Day broke with a weak gray light, and the storm died down. Jus stood up weary beyond speech. Mivarsh said, "Ye be devils, but of myself I marvel, for I have dwelt by snow mountains all my days, and many I wot of that have been benighted on the snows in wild weather, and not one but was starved by reason of the cold. I speak of them that were found. Many were not found, for the spirits devoured them." Whereat Lord Brandok Daha laughed aloud, saying, "O Mavarsh, I fear me that in thee I have but a graceless dog. Look on him, that in hardihood and bodily endurance against all hardships of frost or fire, surpasseth me as greatly as I surpass thee. Yet is he weariest of the three. Wouldst know why? I'll tell thee. All night he hath striven against the cold, chafing not himself only, but me and thee, to save us from frostbite. And be sure, naught else had saved thy carcass." By then was the mist grown lighter, so that they might see the ridge for 100 paces or more where it went up before them, each pinnacle standing out shadowy and unsubstantial against the next succeeding one more shadowy still. And the pinnacles showed monstrous huge through the mist, like mountain peaks in stature. They roped and set forth, scaling the towers or turning them, now on this side, now on that, sometimes standing on teeth of rock that seemed cut off from all earth else, solitary in a sea of shifting vapor, sometimes descending into a deep gash in the ridge with a blank wall rearing aloft on the further side, and empty air yawning to left and right. The rocks were firm and good, like those they had first climbed from the glacier, but they went but a slow pace, for the climbing was difficult, and made dangerous by new snow and by the ice that glazed the rocks. As the day wore, the wind was fallen, and all was still when they stood, at length, before a ridge of hard ice that shot steeply up before them like the edge of a sword. The east side of it, on their left, was almost sheer, ending in a blank precipice that dropped out of sight without a break. The western slope, scarcely less steep, ran down in a white even sheet of frozen snow till the clouds engulfed it. Brandok Daha waited on the last blunt truth of rock at the foot of the ice ridge. "The rest is thine," he cried to Lord Jus. "I would not that any save thou shouldst tread him first, for he is thy mountain."
"Without thee I had never won up hither," answered Jus, "and it is not fitting that I should have that glory to stand first upon the peak, when thine was the main achievement. Go thou before."
"I will not," said Lord Brandok Daha, "and it is not so." So Jus went forward, smiting with his axe great steps just below the backbone of the ridge on the western side, and Lord Brandok Daha and Mivarsh Faz followed in the steps. Presently a wind arose in the unseen spaces of the sky and tore the mist like a rotten garment. Spears of sunlight blazed through the rifts. Distant sunny lands shimmered in the unimaginable depths to the southward, seen over the crest of a tremendous wall that stood beyond the abyss. A screen of black rock buttresses seamed with 1,000 gullies of glistening snow, and crowned, as with battlements, with a row of mountain peaks, savage and fierce of form, that made the eye blink for their brightness. The lean spires of the summit ridge of Kashtra Pivarka. These, that the demons had so long looked up to as in distant heaven, now lay beneath their feet. Only the peak they climbed still reared itself above them, clear now and near to view, showing a bare beetling cliff on the northeast, overhung by a cornice of snow. Jus marked the cornice, turned him again to his step-cutting, and in half an hour from the breaking of the clouds stood on that unascended pinnacle, with all earth beneath him. They went down a few feet on the southern side and sat on some rocks. A fair lake, studded with islands, lay bosomed in wooded and crag-girt hills at the foot of a deep-cut valley which ran down from the gates of Zimion Via. Ilanon and Ashnalon rose nearby in the west, with the delicate white peak of Acra Garsh showing between them. Beyond, mountain beyond mountain, like the sea. Just looked southward, where the blue land stretched in fold upon fold of rolling country, soft and misty, till it melted in the sky.
"Thou and I," said he, "first of the children of men, now behold with living eyes the fabled land of Zimion Via. Is it true, thinkest thou, which philosophers tell us of that fortunate land? That no mortal foot may tread it, but the blessed souls do inhabit it of the dead that be departed, even they that were great upon earth, and did great deeds when they were living, that scorned not earth and the delights and the glories thereof, and yet did justly, and were not dastards nor yet oppressors?
Who knoweth?" said Brandok Daha, resting his chin in his hand and gazing south as in a dream. "Who shall say he knoweth?" They were silent a while. Then Jus spake, saying,
"If thou and I come thither at last, O my friend, shall we remember Demon Land?" And when he answered him not, Jus said, "I had rather row on Moonmere under the stars of a summer's night than be a king of all the land of Zimion Via. And I had rather watch the sun rise on the scarf than dwell in gladness all my days on an island of that enchanted lake of Ravari under Castra Belorn."
Now the curtain of cloud that had hung till now about the eastern heights was rent into shreds, and Castra Belorn stood like a bride before them, 2 or 3 miles to eastward, facing the slanting rays of the sun. On all her vast precipices scarce a rock showed bare, so encrusted were they with a dazzling robe of snow. More lovely she seemed, and more graceful in her airy poise, than they had yet beheld her. Jus and Brandok Daha rose up, as men arise, to greet a queen in her majesty. In silence they looked on her for some minutes. Then Brandok Daha spake, saying, "Behold thy bride, O Jus." End of chapter 12.